Never fear for lack of variety of expression, or lack of appreciation. I said it seemed rather vague to us, because it was so difficult to think of all these things as more than unstable visions, where there was no solid material as we know material. You cannot understand the conditions, but you need not think of these things moving away from you, disappearing like a dream. They stay. I saw the same beautiful creations when I first came that I see now. We love our surroundings and do not change them except for some vital reason. If a tree was in your way, would you not cut it down? Or a pillar that did not correspond with the rest of the architecture, would you not replace it? Something of the kind might induce a change here, but we rest in the very permanency of the things we love. Nevertheless, you must not forget that the heavenly universe is limitless, and millions of spirits are creating new homes and new surroundings out in space. And the beauty grows and grows, and a change of scene can be had in an instant's time by a journey into space. Spirit is the only thing that persists, then why cannot you conceive of its permanence? If you have so many vast territories, I should think it might interfere with movement to other planets and universes. Not at all. Remember, we are not confined to the ground. We are not hindered by obstacles, for we move over, as easily as in a straight line. Vast spaces are given to beauty of scene or of landscape, but remember the ease and quickness with which we move. What would 100 miles be, for instance, for light to travel? Again, when speaking of beauty, we were told, we have everything that pertains to beauty, either of dress or scenery or gems or anything else. Make no mistake, your world has nothing to compare with the beauty of this. I had been questioning about their surroundings in various ways, and asked here, I realize that beautiful things are there. But I was thinking that one would not need many things there that are used on Earth, such as a pocket knife, a pencil, a sewing machine, or an automobile, and I wonder just what will be there. Suppose you needed a knife, why, then create one. That is within the range of a spirit power. But you would find it quicker to perform the service without the bother of making a knife. And this applies to other things as well. We do not need the sewing machine when we can create the dress by quicker and better means. Yes, I realize that you really need little that we have here. Even your houses are not needed for protection from storms and cold. We do love our homes, and we love to have them beautiful, but they do not require the care that is given earthly homes. Beauty is carefree here. We wish we could give you a picture of our home, but you would want to come right away if we did. After this chapter was arranged thus far, Mary and Dee, in answer to a question, gave an account of their experiences and education there. This gives further information on the subjects mentioned in the last 3 chapters, and is given here just as we have it on our records, except that a portion is omitted that is of too intimate a nature to publish. Mary said, I was very ignorant when I came over. I was dazed at first and did not recognize myself as spirit. But my good angel was there and I was led into comprehension through suggestion and through teaching. But it had to be very simple at first. Will you know that the first thing I learned was how to walk? In other words, how to move as spirits move, with mental instead of physical effort. When I found I could move from place to place, I was as eager and happy as a child. And this lasted quite a while, for you see I was only a child in this new life. Then I had to visualize differently. I had not learned the difference between physical and spiritual sight. This took longer, and meantime I made some mistakes. After that my hearing developed. I do not mean that I had no perception of what we might call hearing, but it was really thought transference or telepathy, as you might call it, from my guide. It was some time before I actually heard spirit voices. And then after a time, I began to hear faint sounds of music, like some far-off exquisite orchestra. I can never tell you how this affected me, nor with what joy I discovered that I was musical in my soul. That was one of the things I was denied, for the most part, in my earthly life, and I did not realize my own sensitiveness to sound, nor did I dream that sound could bring such ecstasy. Then I knew what I wanted to study, and after a long time spent in acquiring speech, hearing, sight, and movement, I took up that study in earnest. I loved it and did not suppose anything could be equal in attraction. But finally my guide called me to go with her to meet others who had come over as ignorant and as helpless as I had been, and suddenly my heart was touched, and my love went out to them without effort. So these two were my regular occupations, and later I added astronomy to a degree, never to a proficiency, and after that, travel. I had really not cared for a home at the time. I went from hall to hall, temple to temple, seeking knowledge. And not until D came, and our love wished an abiding place that we might call home, did I begin to think of architecture. D will tell you the rest. Can you tell us how you came to be leader of that circle? Well, I was so eager for knowledge that perhaps I gained faster than others. Then my work with the newly arrived souls, many of whom longed only for knowledge of their friends, and to send word to them of their safety, made me begin to study communication, to add that to my other occupations. I found in this work so many ways through which I could give comfort, that I grew more and more interested. And gradually others who were attracted to the subject gathered about me, until we simply became a circle. As I had studied the subject more than the others, the leadership was left to me. And so you see it was very simple. All a matter of attraction and congenial thought. Then your circle is primarily one for communication? Yes, that is the main work of this circle. But we are not confined to the one study. You will find great diversity of study and tastes and acquirement when you come, and will realize that through variety we avoid anything like monotony. Now D, we want you to go on with the story. I will begin with our homemaking. Mary came near to being just pure intellect before I arrived. But she found her heart then, and our companionship was ideal from the first. I wanted a home. She did not at first care for it, but now loves it as much as I. We decided upon the architecture, and wished rooms enough for friends, and, of course, I wished pictures and books and beauty in every part of the home. We planned it together. And when you come, you will find in it what I desired on earth, beauty, rest, books, music, halls for entertaining others, and quiet places for those who wish for quiet. The setting is in a grove, and I know you will love it as we do. As you do not need kitchens, dining rooms, or bedrooms, just what use do you have for a home? We go there for the comfort of companionship. I mean quiet companionship, for our homes are as sacred to our personality as an earthly home. No one intrudes, no crowds gather, but quiet companionship is there, and the many things we love books, music, pictures, rest, or the entertaining of friends. Nothing is lacking except those things necessary to mortal comfort or convenience. Just how do you entertain? You do not play cards or give afternoon teas, do you? Mary says, the manner of entertaining is as diverse as personality. Some have readings, some have artistic scenes, or you might almost say, dramas. Others at times give pure fun-loving entertainments, and all is well, and everyone happy. Do you have great dramas? Will you know that the great actors still give great impersonations? And, indeed, much history is told in that way. Shakespeare wrote historic plays, and actors here are greatly in demand for historic representations. For lack of a better place in the book to put it, I will include here a paragraph on art that was given us. Art is a big subject here, for it embraces all beauty, as well as all combinations of beautiful material. The beauty of art is the beauty of production, and you must remember that the natural beauty you love on earth is here one of the arts of this life. Scenery, mountain, stream, forest, vale, and hill, beautiful homes, beautiful statuary, paintings, libraries, and even the colors and the garments we wear, and the dresses we fashion, are all in the way of art. Can you see what art means in this spirit life, when the touch of spirit, like a fairy wand, can create the most marvelous beauty and the finest adornments? We can call them into being and preserve them as we choose, and can scatter them to make way for other beauty. This all takes study. Each and every one is a class, a school, a craft by itself, and the students of that craft or school prepare themselves by education in the ways necessary for each work. 8. Language and speech. We are so accustomed to speech in our everyday intercourse, that the possibility of a more rapid means of communication seldom engages our attention. So it was with much interest that the following was received: "Mind moves here with a quickness not to be expressed in words. We use pictures and symbols largely, because a thought can be more quickly expressed in that way. And we have trouble at all times with earth language, and particularly when trying to express spiritual conditions. But all are taught to speak the earth language so that we may help those who are there. We do not need to talk to convey our ideas, but we can speak whenever we wish, and oratory and poetry and lessons are given in word language. But in ordinary intercourse ideas flash from mind to mind without need for words. We speak with spirit organs as we use other spirit perceptions, and our language is beautiful and the speech musical." This was all noted in our record, but among the hundreds of pages of other matter it was for the time lost sight of, and though some reference was made to telepathy two or three times, it so happened that speech was not mentioned. One evening Mary said, "We can give you a few sentences if you like, from one who has just wandered into the circle and wishes to try to communicate. I will do the writing. He says that he is not gifted in expression, and has not been here long enough to acquire the eloquence of the spirit language. But he would like to convey a thought to earth for those who are listening for heavenly words. Now this is hardly the place or occasion for this appeal, but I am after the closing sentence of this quotation as an illustration, and the plea is so earnest that I am including the whole of it." He said, "Go forward. Let nothing discourage or keep you back. Tell the truth, plant the seed, by wayside, in desert place, or in fertile ground, and trust to the harvest to win souls into the truth. The truth is more beautiful than I can express. If only a tithe of it could be comprehended by earth mortals, the world would be fair indeed, and sin would soon fade from sight. This is the truth to spread abroad. Do not be discouraged though you seem to fail. The harvest will surely come and souls will be led into righteousness and will forget to do evil. Children will be brought into loving service, ministers will stop arguing about greeds and will teach the love and patience of Christ. Can you visualize a world in which the spirit life shall be the goal, and service to others the ordinary way of living? Go forward, I say, again and yet again. Go forward." Mary says, "He is in earnest and realizes the need of earth. He was not a minister on earth, but nevertheless a worker for right living and right thinking, and the knowledge acquired here has made him still more earnest. Does he hear what we say?" "Yes, he hears fairly well, and I have told him some of your discouragements. You see, we can convey thought so quickly, that I could tell him of these things even while writing. It was this idea that led me to again ask, do you have anything analogous to spoken language?" "Yes, and yes again. We have speech and plenty of it. But if thought flashes from soul to soul without speech, then it is quicker than any words, is it not? The spirit language is more in thought than in sentences. For instance, you may realize how at times a thought may suggest to you an entire picture, or an entire subject. Thus it is with us. Thought moves quickly and catches the sense of the expression before an entire sentence could be formed. This, however, might not apply to scientific explanations, nor perhaps to deep philosophy, when great accuracy would be necessary. Then how would you express an abstract statement? That would depend upon the subject to be explained. A word might answer, or a book of explanations might happen to be the way. How would you convey the idea of goodness, for instance? An action of goodness or kindness might be expressed pictorially, the abstract virtue would require longer definition. Our language is one of exceeding exactness, as well as of great beauty. There is nothing of the human language with which to compare it. You remember how I tried to give you some semblance of a spirit word, and utterly failed? So, we cannot give you our expressions, but you must take it for granted that language here is the highest type of expression, both in beauty and in its power of conveying thought. On arriving there, do you learn it as we would learn a new language here? We learn it, but not by the old slow methods of earth life. We absorb it as a flower absorbs dew, or the earth absorbs rain. When we arrive, we will have to learn it then before we can understand much. You will know from the first that love and kindness are here and surrounding you. Then you will know the words that express them. Afterward, other thoughts will express themselves to you by the attitude or movement of friends, even as a child learns its mother's motions and expressions. And so, with a quickness you can hardly realize, you will acquire the language of this sphere. It grows, and grows rapidly. Can you understand? Does a knowledge of languages here aid one after arriving there? I do not think so. Thought telegraphs to thought, and the language matters little. Consider the power of thought impressions even when not connected with language. Animals have this sensitiveness well developed, and many humans are also sensitive to thought waves. While assembling the matter for this book, Mary and Dee have asked occasionally about our progress, and when one time I mentioned the title of this chapter, Mary added the following: "The language here is partly symbol, partly flashes of thought or perception. These are beside and beyond our spoken language, which is more eloquent and of wider range than any known on earth. Our speakers are numerous in the halls of learning, and convey knowledge in wonderful terms. Yet always there are suggestions that arouse pictures or thought in the mind. We listen to eloquence that is thrilling, and we listen to statements that are so clear and terse that we cannot fail of understanding." I asked if their language had changed as had ours through the passing centuries, or was it the same it had always been? Language is capable of expansion, and our language grows and becomes more rich as it seeks to interpret new thought and wider experience. Memory does not let go as easily here as there, and while we add new expressions, we keep the old ones too. You have almost an entire change in the English language since the early poets. We have not changed in that way because our construction is more perfect to start with. Any change is more in the expression, to take in new thought and new experience, like travels to other planets, or growing in touch with other lives or other speech. It was in the first place a little surprising to learn that one would need to know a different language in the spirit world, but an additional surprise came when we found there were still other languages. A friend said, "I am trying to learn the language of the different spheres that I may understand the expressions of those on higher planes. Is there a different language on each plane?" "Yes, it takes on more delicate shadings, a more ethereal quality perhaps might express it, as it deals with more ethereal things. These languages are translated by the different messengers. We need to know the manner of expression to translate their words into something meaning as nearly as possible the same. Our language is not capable of expressing their finest shades of meaning. And if we of this sphere cannot translate it into adequate expression, what can mortal language do? I tell you, my friend, only a tithe of the higher teachings can get through our duller comprehension. Therefore I study and hope to be able to understand at least, whether I can give out the ideas to others in language eloquent enough or forcible enough to express what they wish to say." A messenger spoke of the need for further knowledge of languages as follows: "There are worlds not so immersed in material thought as the earth, worlds where spirit predominates, and where communication with the unseen becomes a natural occupation with the people. It is one of our delightful tasks to go to such worlds to give and receive information. To make more easy such communication is part of our work, for language differs, and signs and symbols often have to be used. Yet when spirit predominates, comprehension is easy without any language, just a reception of the idea without any spoken word." The difficulty of expression was again mentioned when we read one evening the beautiful sonnet that is attributed to the spirit of F. W. H. Myers, "To all who wait, blindfolded by the flesh, upon the stammered promise that we give, tangling ourselves in the material mesh a moment, while we tell you that we live, greeting, and reassurance, never doubt that the slow tidings of our joyful state, so hardly given, so haltingly made out, are but the creaking hinges of the gate. Beyond, the garden lies, and as we turn, wondering how much you hear, how much you guess, once more the roses of glad service burn with hues of loving thought and thankfulness, once more we move among them, strong and free, marveling yet in our felicity." This poem was from the book, Christopher, by Sir Oliver Lodge. And they say, the poem is true. If only you could see our difficulty of expression, you would be patient with misunderstandings. We are not so in touch with material language and thought as to be able to express the marvels of this life by material words or imagery. We are of different conditions and different expression, yet we try to become material for the moment, that we may help you to understand, but often the language fails and we are confused by lack of right words. I don't remember now what made me ask the following question, but I do remember the surprise with which I received the reply. I asked D, "Are you known by your old name there?" "No. I have another name here. But with Earth friends I keep the Earth name." "Are all names different there?" "We all have different names here, but we love to hear the old familiar names from friends there. We take names more suitable for ethereal qualities." We asked what determined the name. "Names here apply to character more than to fancy, and we know each other by some distinguishing characteristic. But all names are musical and good to hear. But you are all good and are all perfect, so it would seem that you would all have the same names?" "No. That is your conception of this life, but you are far from comprehending. Personal characteristics are as pronounced here as they are there, except that we do not have the distinction of being faulty, or awkward, or homely, or sinful, as people on Earth might have, if called by their distinguishing characteristics. I should think that you would run out of names in so great a multitude. You do not realize the variety of attributes here. But even so, think how many there are of the same name on your plane. It does no harm to have the same name repeated here any more than it does there." I asked what my name would be, and was told, "We will not tell you, though we think we know it already. Who gives it to me? It grows. It is written all over you." I was talking at one time through the pencil with my father. I felt that he would get great pleasure in the wonderful opportunities for knowledge, and he assured me that this was so, and spoke of the great libraries there. "You will never be happier than when you see the wonderful libraries and the wonderful knowledge expressed in them. Different from Earth libraries, but the word may express what I mean. Can you give us any impression of how knowledge is thus stored? It is all so intangible to your way of expression, I do not know that I can describe it. But if you can picture wireless telegraphy as impressing itself in words, then can be read, if you can think of thought expressing itself almost simultaneously, flashing itself on pages, perhaps you can get an idea of the way books are formed. There are such great minds here, and the greatest of Earth's writers find their powers so exalted and so easily expressed, that books may appear without labor. We have libraries, and there are books and books, and knowledge comes easily to those who seek. Clairvoyance might express it somewhat, an illumination that presents the thought without effort. This on the part of the reader. The writer gives his thought inspirationally, and the words are transferred to the page without effort. Something like this. I cannot give any more definite description in your language. Later Mary contributed a little to the subject as follows: "We have books, or the spirit counterpart of books. They are composed of etheric substance, but can be read by spirit sight, and enjoyed by the students and teachers here. They are not quite as Earth books are, but are still something within the touch and sight of spirit, and can be read at any time. How could we store up the histories of worlds, or the progress of other planet life, if we only saw the present? Our teachers of history are wonderful in their learning and their memory, but they prepare the lessons given to others from the books that are within the reach of all in the libraries here." 9. Spirit life. With most people the mind is so completely ruled by the material senses that they are almost incapable of conceiving or understanding spirit life in any way. Any idea of life without material bodies is almost unthinkable. The effort to bring such a conception within the bounds of comprehension is so great that no doubt it is a factor, and possibly a large one, in making the general public inclined to shy at any mention of spirits. The prospect of mental effort is a portent to make most of us wary in approaching subjects requiring much thought. One's thought about a spirit being is a portent to be confused with impressions formed by ghost stories, something unreal, something to be doubted, because contrary to our usual sense conceptions. I presume we must have expressed some such impression to cause the following to be written: "I am here just as surely as you are there, and more so, because I am all that life can give, and you still have the limitations of material life, which prevents the fullness of spiritual expression. But you do not seem real? We said, reality is something that exists. We exist, mind exists, and all the things created by mind exist as long as the mind holds them in existence. We exist, but not in material form. But spirit is higher in the scale of existence than matter, therefore, we are more real than we were in our material forms. Life here is reality, and we have spiritual forms far better than the earthly ones. All the finer qualities of mind and soul are expressed by us in greater degree than before we lived the spiritual life. There is no life but spirit anywhere in the universe, but the material envelope in which it is enclosed oftentimes hinders free expression. We are trying to free the spirit a little from its earthly encumbrances and let it see its destination out among the stars. Can you tell us if your life there? Life here is sane and normal, and any other description is an injustice. But we are not here for amusement, though we may be amused. We are here for knowledge and work, knowledge of spiritual conditions, work for the earth people that they may learn these conditions. Do you have no pleasures? Do you think that the things that influence you there, such as music and all that brings you inspiration, are not the things that give us happiness here? Have you any conception of what the music of this life could be? As to pleasures, pleasure of companionship here is largely dependent on congeniality as it is there. Do not think that arrival here causes lives to be suddenly transformed. Life is a growth here as there. Happiness is a relative term. All human faculties are here spiritualized and enlarged. We are given the finest education in all conceivable lines, and thus fitted for helping others. With spiritual power comes occupation in the highest sense, for we become teachers and lead others along the paths we have already followed. Some are fitted for one work, some for another, but all are in happy and congenial employment. This is our work, pleasure is work, and work is pleasure. But we have many pleasures besides, you might say, earth's highest pleasures idealized. For heaven is real and earth the shadow, spirit the reality and matter the unreality. Worth is of more value than beauty, but worth expresses itself in beauty. When the spirit first arrives, it is not more beautiful than the earth life expressed, but becomes beautiful in proportion to spiritual advancement. All spirits are fairer than their earthly envelope, an increase in beauty as the spirit progresses. Life is good when character is good, but not when character is evil. We must overcome evil and change it into good. That is our mission. If all become perfectly good, it would almost seem as though life would become monotonous. We have more varieties of goodness than the mortal life can show. You will be surprised at the difference in individuals on the plane where none are perverse or wicked. Then think of the different occupations and industries, the different arts and sciences, of travel to other worlds and the wonders revealed there. Think of oratory, music, poetry, and the light slash and winsome touches that writers of humorous literature have brought to this side, and you will realize a little how, instead of monotony, we have infinite variety. We had been asking some rather deep questions about life in general, and a teacher came one evening with the following in answer: life is an unknown quantity. Even we here do not analyze, nor control, nor dissect, nor understand. It is. That is all. Now what are we to do with it? Earthbound minds are dealing with earthly materials. Money, food, dress. But all of these are like vanishing shadows to us. What then shall we do with this wonderful extension of our powers and existence? Forever. Think of it. To go on and on. How? Let me try to tell you of the how as it seems to us. You have already had glimpses of our activities, but only glimpses. It is not possible to outline perfectly all of our interests and work. They are wide as the universe, as different as the thought of man or spirit. Wonder upon wonder, marvel upon marvel, unfold to our growing vision, and life is never for one instant lacking in interest. Nevertheless, it is best to focus our attention, study, and thought on those things most interesting to each personality. Some choose science, some philosophy, some invention, some the studies of other universes and other lives. The thought of this circle is directed in various ways, with Mary, your instructor, as our leader. She wishes us to come in contact with earthly minds, and help those minds to greater influence through spiritual guidance. Therefore, one of our activities is, as you know, communication with Earth.